Welcome to Dealer Driven, where the rubber meets the road to success. This episode sponsored by JGP Wealth Management.
You think long-term when you run a dealership. Reinsurance rewards the same discipline. Retain premiums, manage risk, build capital. Reinsurance for dealers who play the long game. JGP Reinsurance Alpha.
Welcome to Dealer Driven. I'm Michael Hayes.
And I'm Cameron Wilson. Today we're diving into a topic that every dealership faces daily, but few truly understand all the ins and outs. Vehicle warranties. There's so much to understand about what warranties cover, what dealers are responsible for, and how to avoid costly audit chargebacks.
Joining us today is Lee Yates, an instructor at NADA Academy. Lee is joining us to help you understand warranty compliance, audit processes, and how to protect yourself from liability.
Whether it's factory warranties, implied warranties, or federal requirements, Lee is here to demystify the whole system and give dealers practical tools to stay compliant and avoid chargeback surprises.
Let's get started.
Lee, welcome to the show. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you. I am thrilled to be here. It's a topic that I've spent a lot of my career working on, and I love to educate dealers on common sense ways that they can protect themselves.
And it's also a topic as a dealer I tried to avoid for most of my life. That's absolutely.
I am sure.
Well, let's get right into that there, Lee. Why do you think there is so much confusion and lack of clarity about OEM warranties?
Well, there are so many warranties. I mean, you look at just a new vehicle warranty that could include basic warranties, powertrain warranties, corrosion warranties, emission warranties. There's a restraint warranty on vehicles. There's so many warranties, and they don't stay the stagnant year over year. So model years, we could have changes in warranty terms and coverages. They could add warranties. They could take warranties away. So it's an ever-moving target. It's something that people really need to put some effort into informing themselves about. And we need to be able to do that all the time, not assume that what we know today is going to remain that way forever.
You mentioned OEM warranties, and those are warranties placed on the vehicle by the manufacturer or imposed by federal law. What are the other warranties dealers need to be aware of?
Well, if you're doing certified pre-owned vehicles, they have a different warranty, covers different things, and is oftentimes longer on some of the parts. If you purchase a part, that part from an OEM dealer, that part carries a warranty, and those are vastly different, OEM to OEM and part to part. They could be 12 months, 12,000 miles if dealer installed, or just 12 months if the customer bought it over the counter and installed it themselves. A lot of our OEMs are now 24 months or 24,000 miles. Some have lifetime warranties, shocks, mufflers. There's a whole list. So it's really complicated even to try to determine what warranty may apply to a given repair or a given part. So it's something that we really have to put a lot of effort into making sure before we tell a customer if something's covered under warranty, that we've been able to verify which warranty, how long it is, and that it was actually a warrantable defect that created the situation in the first place.
Yeah, so along those lines then, you know, thinking about the importance of the staff, let's talk about some of the reasons why it's so important for the entire staff, salespeople who are telling them about them, service people, you know, the service consultants, service managers, everybody else, to have all them informed and knowledgeable about these various different warranties between parts and vehicles and everything else.
Sure. It's super important because we need to inform our staff so they can inform our clients on any warranties that they may be entitled to for a part or a vehicle that they've purchased. We also need to make sure that they understand the intricacies of the warranty. Something as simple as what is a warrantable defect is something that many dealership employees are not informed of up front, and we always end up finding out the hard way that we covered something and that defect wasn't really a warrantable defect. So dealers need to invest in someone who can be the expert for their dealership, someone who knows the ins and outs, who makes it part of their responsibility to do the research, to know where to go to get questions answered, to know where to go and where to direct the staff to go when they need to determine what the warrantable situation is for any given repair or part replacement. And there's a lot to know. I mean, we've just touched the surface. We didn't even talk about EV and hybrid, which are completely different warranties, much longer for batteries, electric motors. It's just super complicated. And when we talk about emissions warranties, we have California emissions warranties, which is now in 18 states and the District of Columbia that uses that emission warranty, which is much more complicated than the traditional federal emissions. So there's just so much to know. And we really can't expect our employees to know this without someone guiding their discovery. So you really need that person that is able to be the point to collect and disseminate all that information.
Well, that's easy because the salespeople think everything is covered. So, I mean,
well, sure.
Let's go from there. So along that line, though, based on your, you know, experience on both sides of the equation here, both in dealership and with the OEM, what are some of the best places? You mentioned about a champion, but what are some of the best ways that you have seen of education taking place to all of the customer-facing people, the salespeople, the service consultants, everything else, to be educated or to have access to giving the correct information as much as possible first thing, rather than have to go back and make amends?
Sure. We don't want anybody learning the hard way because that usually costs dealers money. So some of the ways that I would take that task on, number one, there are OEM-provided resources. Every OEM now has a communication function that allows people at the dealership to put in a VIN or even a part number and have it spit out available warranty coverages for that. Teaching people how to access and use and interpret that data is absolutely crucial. That can be done one-on-one or in team meetings, but it should be done very soon after an employee assumes a role, either a salesperson, a parts person, or a service advisor who is going to have to be in a position to talk to the customer about those coverages. So they need to really quickly know, where can I go to get a definitive answer? There is OEM warranty training available with almost every OEM. Some of it is live, much less is live now than virtual. But they all have some type of training, whether web-based, live online, or live classes, to teach people at the dealership level how to process claims, how to code claims, how to correct claims, so that we can collect that information right the first time and we can keep the dealer's money flowing.
So, Lee, what are some of the consequences, you know, if dealers aren't doing this training and they have repairs claimed that aren't claimed correctly under the warranties?
Yeah, the simplest thing is the claim would reject. So I would code the claim, I'd submit it into the system, and something wouldn't be right with the claim. So instead of getting that claim paid, I would get a reject. And some of those are fixable. A big number of them are just mistakes on the claim. I could fix them, resubmit, and the biggest penalty there is I just don't get my money turned as quickly. But there are some rejections that cannot be fixed. And those claims, you either have to get authorization from your OEM rep to pay. In some cases, we may have to add an authorization to it if we have the ability to self-authorize a claim. Or in some cases, they just can't be rejected and we end up eating that claim. So it's complicated, but if you don't have someone that's knowledgeable actually entering that information and figuring out how do I build that claim correctly to make sure it gets paid, you could have those rejects. The biggest consequence is you could end up receiving an audit from your OEM who's going to sit down and pull claims and service files and with a fine-tooth comb go over all that information.
Well, that kind of leads to the next question, which I think a lot of us on this call listening to this want to know the answer to. I certainly want to know this answer many years ago. How are dealerships selected for a warranty audit, Lee?
Well, that's a great question. There are several ways. All of our OEMs run trend reporting systems, and they take your dealership's warranty data into their warranty system, and they slice and dice it and compare it to other dealers in your region that are working on similar vehicles, and they look for a couple of things. They check it for volume of a certain type of repairs compared to other dealers in your area working on similar vehicles. And they also look at the cost. So EPVS is something we call expense per vehicle serviced, which takes a look at how much am I spending on claims per vehicle as compared to other dealers. So all of our OEMs send reports to dealership service departments every month that shows where they are different than other dealers that they're being compared to. Now, different doesn't always mean bad, but it means it's time to start looking at that stuff. And if you continue to be different for a period of time and either how much you're charging or how many of a certain repair you're doing, that can get the attention of the audit department. You can also get selected because of unusual things that are happening at the stores. Multiple requests for labor increases can get you more attention from the audit department. Anything that looks unusual, repeated claims on one VIN, multiple claims on a VIN, something that could look like a repeat repair. Also, you know, the chances are dealers are going to get audited. OEMs are doing random audits, and some OEMs are actually setting up that the process to audit every dealership just to make sure that they're being fair across the board.
Yeah. So let's think about that when you're doing an audit then. How far back legally on warranty claims can they go back?
Well, it varies, and it varies widely state to state. Each state passes their own laws that determine how far back a manufacturer can go on a warranty claim. We've got some that are as low as 9 months now. So the window is very small. So those OEMs can take the tack that we're just going to audit people more often. And when a state decides to lower that window, then many of those OEMs will just hire more auditors. We also have up to 3 years for some states. So it depends, and it varies anywhere from 9 months to 3 years. I would say the majority of our states are under 18 months now. There's only a couple that are 2 years or higher, but it used to be pretty standard across the board. It was 2 years. But like I said, now we've got states that are lowering those limits.
So is that 2 years from date of repair or date of submission of the claim?
Date of repair.
Date of repair, typically. Okay, thank you.
Right. And if during that audit they find evidence of fraud, then those windows open up. So I could have a 9-month window, but if the auditor comes in and finds out that there's fraudulent activity going on, then that allows them to open that window for as long as they find the fraud.
So, Lee, what are the top reasons that dealerships are charged back in warranty audits?
Well, it really boils down to documentation. The number one reason is lack of some required documentation on a warranty claim, either poor write-up, poor technician notes, not having the diagnostic sheets attached, diagnostic printouts, diagnostic specifications. Many OEMs require certain measurements. We might have runouts. We might have diagnostic codes required on the claim to support that we made the right repair. So if those things are not attached, that could cause a claim chargeback. And that's the biggest claim chargeback by far. Missing customer signatures or improper customer claiming the warranty. Time punches. Every OEM requires some type of timekeeping responsibilities. Not all of them require time punches for everything. Some of them only require time punches for warranty, and many dealers don't require their techs to also time punch customer pay. And the problem you run into there is if the auditor only finds that they're keeping time for the warranties, then they have no way to really support that that was the time they spent, since they don't have evidence of time they spent on other repairs. And auditors can request payroll records. They can actually line them up and see how much a technician was paid for all repairs that were done, regardless of pay type, during a day. And they can pretty much tell whether those time punches are correct or not that you're submitting for warranty. So a best practice there is have your techs clock in and out actual time on every repair, and then you don't get caught. Improper diagnosis, failure to follow TSB or recommended repair procedures, inaccurate mileage or dates is in the top. Missing service manager signatures for authorizations for things like add-on repairs, customer call-in, phone authorizations, non-warranty or unnecessary repairs. So if we charge the factory for something that isn't really covered by that warranty, or we went beyond the scope of the repair needed, that could come back. Repeat repairs. Again, we talked about that as being even a signal that an audit may be necessary. And then one of the big ones in the last few years is single-use parts not charged on the claim. And this is across the board OEMs. So there are certain bolts, nuts, gaskets that are single-use parts, which mean every time I make a repair on a part of the vehicle that has those types of single-use parts, I need to have those charged out on the ticket by the parts department, and I need to replace those as new parts when I make the repair.
You think long-term when you run a dealership. Reinsurance rewards the same discipline. Retain premiums, manage risk, build capital. Reinsurance for dealers who play the long game. JGP Reinsurance Alpha.
Lee, what are some of the ways dealers can protect themselves from audit liability? It sounds like a lot of documentation, but do you have any other recommendations?
Yeah. Number one, again, it goes back to having people informed at the dealership while they're making the repairs. What are the requirements for each? And there's thousands of repairs that can be made to a vehicle under warranty. So you really need someone there that's the repository of all that information, but everyone involved in the repair needs to be literate about it. So service advisors should have lots of information about what's required for certain types of repair. And the more technical the repair is, the more likely there's going to be requirements for additional documentation on those repairs. Technicians should really be given the time to study, and their responsibility is to do the repair as it's laid out in the service procedure they're following. They need to understand that. They need to know where to go to see the steps, because the times they're paid are actually set on the steps laid out in whatever repair process. So if it's a regular repair, it's a service manual. If it's a TSB, the TSB actually lists the repair process they're supposed to follow. If it's a recall, it's similar. The repair process is there. So they need to read and understand that. Single-use parts are highlighted in those publications as well. And the parts department needs to be part of that, because they need to recognize when they pull up the schematic of the parts that we have single-use parts. So they can help our technicians catch those kind of things, and that can be very helpful. But everybody that's involved in a warranty claim at the dealership needs to be educated, needs to be at least functionally literate about these things, and needs to have somebody that they can go to if they're not sure, so they get the guidance during the repair. Once the repair's done and the repair order's closed and the car's out of the bay, it's too late to fix anything. I got to be fixed while the repair is happening. All of this stuff is time sensitive. All of the diagnostic sheets have dates and time punches. Any tech line will be documented with date and time that we talked to somebody. So it's not like I can find out that that stuff is missing 2 days, 3 days later and have any chance of actually getting the right documentation, because the date's the wrong date, the time's the wrong time. So it's really crucial that someone knows and can kind of keep track as the repair is being made. So everybody needs to be educated.
So give us a couple of the top behavioral daily characteristics of what you would consider a high-performing warranty administrator.
Well, a high-performing warranty administrator should be somebody who is that repository, whose job it is to collect and disseminate that information to the other dealership employees, not just service, and not just parts, also sales. I mean, sales is where the warranty journey starts. So if the salesmen don't understand the warranty well enough to let our customers know what to expect, that can really set that whole relationship off on a bad foot. So I talked and attended sales meetings at least once a month when I worked at dealerships just to help my salespeople know what it was that our warranty covered and, as importantly, what it didn't. And I'm telling you, those meetings were well attended and I got a ton of questions. So the salespeople were very happy to have somebody that could actually relate that information to them. The warranty administrator should be the person, ideally, that is coding the claims, that's determining what labor ops we're going to apply for, what labor ops work for that claim, because that's building the money. And if we do that incorrectly, that sets up a whole chain of problems, including claim rejects that may not be able to be fixed. So you get one chance to do that right. And if you can easily leave money on the table if you have someone that's not well-versed in how to code those claims doing it. The factory will be happy to let you leave all their money on the table. So
yes, they will.
Yeah. And that job has to happen as the repair is just finished, while the car's still in the bay, while the tech's still in the bay, so that if there's something missing, we can fix it. But once we close the paperwork, once the tech moves on to the next repair, it's too late. I see dealers all the time that are allowing service advisors to code claims. I rarely see service advisors that have a real good grasp on all of the intricacies of those warranty systems. So if that's who you're going to assign, they need to be given training. The OEMs offer it. You have consulting firms that can do it. But somebody needs to train whoever is preparing the claim on not just how to use labor ops, but what other documentation to look for. Because once it's past that line, it's too late to go back. So they should be coaching and mentoring those people, whoever it is at the dealership. If you have a warranty administrator with multiple rooftops, that warranty administrator can't be everywhere at once. So you would hope that they would take on the role of training somebody that would perform those same duties for each of those rooftops, and that they would be the person helping them to understand how to build a claim correctly. One of the things I suggest all the time is OEMs, now several of them have live claim editing. In the day, you used to have to prepare your claims using books, big thick books we had to pull down and look up labor ops. Then it became that the DMSs downloaded that information and we could use our DMS to labor op the claims. But now I can go in and do live editing with many of our OEMs. So I should go directly in, build my claim into the system that's going to edit it immediately, because then I can try things. I can see if these claims, if these labor ops overlap, and I can check my claim before I commit to payment to the RO. So I know Chrysler has it. I believe Ford may have it now. So there's several OEMs where I could go in and actually build my claim and submit it at the same time. Those kind of resources should be taken advantage of, because that would keep chargebacks down. It would keep you from having to charge back money that we weren't entitled to. And I can close my claim for the exact amount I'm going to receive from the manufacturer, which is a huge benefit.
Editing sounds like AI to me.
A little bit, yeah. It's much closer to AI than batching claims, taking your best guess, batching claims and sending them in the next day when all your paperwork's closed, and then getting answers back from the manufacturer that you asked for too much and now you have to write that off.
That's a great tip. So in addition to that, Lee, what's one process every dealership should do an audit on internally themselves at least once a month?
I think it's a great idea once a month for the warranty administrator or whoever is doing warranty claims, if you don't have a sitting administrator, the service manager and the parts manager, to pull 25 repair orders that happened the previous month that were paid through warranty and sit down and look for those documentation items that an auditor would. Learn how to look for the time punches, learn how to read tech notes, and take a look and see what you're going to do. If I catch it in a month and I fix it, then I've stopped that liability moving forward. But if I never look at the claims, I'll never know until an auditor sitting across the table telling me the mistakes I've made. So if we can continually learn to fix them and to be aware and to spend a few minutes to take a look at our paperwork and make sure it's going to support what we claimed from the manufacturer, that goes a long way. Another thing is receivable warranty schedules should be looked at least weekly. And we should be looking for anything unusual. If a claim's sitting out there, and we should also work the open RO list. We only have certain the amount of time between the date of the repair and submission to get the claim paid. Most manufacturers are now 30 days. So I want to make sure I don't have warranty claims sitting out there in an open status, and I need to get those closed and submitted for warranty because we're on the clock. So those are some things I think should happen every month. And we should continue to have communication. Techs, you know, should be taught this. We should have meetings. They should be able to ask questions. We should be able to help them understand where to get information they need to support their claims.
Any quick thought on outsourcing or not?
Well, there's lots of third-party companies out there that are warranty claim processors. I don't know them all personally. I've worked with a couple of them over the years, but I can tell you that many of them are not well positioned to help avoid audit consequences. Because in order to avoid audit consequences, I've got to position myself during the repair. And most third-party companies aren't even seeing the repair until the next day or after the claim is paid. And so they do have a place. They can submit claims and correct claims, but they really can't help you avoid an audit. Some of them offer some education, so obviously you could take advantage of that. But if you're going to go third-party processing, just understand that doesn't mean that they can protect you from an audit. That's still your responsibility and your employee's responsibility. Also, my concern with third-party companies is how I'm going to pay them. Dealers should never pay by a percentage of the amount of money that they claim, because the person that submits your claim could actually ask for extra money. So they should never be in conflict of interest. If you're going to use a third party, try to get a contract with them that's a flat rate for the volume of repairs you expect to run. And then you could bonus them potentially on keeping your money clean, keeping your warranty claims moving and not having claims sitting out for, you know, 15, 30, 45 days waiting for payment. But even warranty administrators should not ever be paid on the amount of money that they're producing. It should really be, you know, for the job.
Absolutely. If a dealer does outsource, are there any safeguards that can be put in place?
A few. Number one, do not ever send your actual repair orders off-site. So I've seen dealers that package up their repair orders and send them to a company. Please don't do that. Make copies, give them electronic access into your system to pull those up. But those repair orders, you are responsible for those. And if you can't produce those in an audit, it's an automatic chargeback. So you never want to send your original documents to a third-party company. Make sure that when you're working with them, that you interview them to the point that you know they understand your OEM warranty system well. Because every OEM is different. A lot of the third-party companies offer services for all OEMs. That doesn't mean that they have experts in all OEM warranties. So find out their capabilities, and then make sure that they are familiar with how to protect you to the extent that they can, knowing that there's nothing they can change once the repair is done. But they should be communicating. They should be letting you know daily what claims were paid, what claims rejected. They need to know what authorizations are required. And technically, authorizations need to happen during the repair. But I won't say that nobody ever puts one on after the fact, but that shouldn't be our normal process.
Terrific. So, Lee, as we close this out, thank you so much. You have given so many wonderful tips for all of us to look at throughout the operation. But we always like to end with one last word. What one last sentence would you put in there? Okay, other than not doing warranty work, what things can we do to limit our audit liability?
Well, like I said, make sure everybody knows and has a source to go to. They realize what resources they have, that there's somebody there that helps them. I've always told dealers I worked with, you know, your OEM gives you a blank check and you fill in that amount every month when you submit your claims. But you don't get to keep the money until you're outside of that audit window. So you're really just taking a loan from the manufacturer until you're outside of your 9 months, 12 months, 18 months for warranty. So every warranty system, your goal should not just be to get the claim paid. It should be to get the claim paid in a manner which is enough to keep the money should that claim get looked at in an audit. And that's, you know, whatever processes you need to set up to make sure that once you put a claim to bed and you file it away and it's been paid, that you are sure that if it ever gets pulled in an audit, there's nothing an auditor could find on that claim that would cause you to have that claim charged back.
Great. Thank you, Lee.
That's a great last thought, Lee. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for the invite. I truly enjoyed it. And thanks. Hope we can do something like this again sometime.
You bet.
And all you dealers out there, Lee has spoken for already. That's all the time we have for today's episode. A big thank you to Lee Yates for breaking down the complex world of vehicle warranties and helping us understand how dealers can protect themselves from audit liability.
This has been Dealer Driven from NADA. I'm Cameron Wilson.
And I'm Michael Hayes. Keep your dealership in drive, and we'll see you next time.